right. Any questions? Cosmology, physics. All right, so let's continue with this, with the time-dependent simple harmonic oscillator. So we were considering this situation where we have a time-dependent frequency, which has an asymptotic region, maybe in the far past, maybe in the far future, maybe both, where the frequency approaches some constant, omega n, and then maybe varies with time in the middle, and then has some approaches some constant omega out. And in this situation, we're able to define privileged sets of mode functions, the in modes and the out modes, which are those solutions to the equations of motion which at early or late times approach the preferred set which gives eigenvectors of the Hamiltonian. And in the case where we have both an in region and an out region, there's going to be a relation because both the in states and the out states form complete sets of solutions, so we can expand one in terms of the other. For example, the out can be expanded in terms of the in using these Bogoliubov coefficients. And then we'll have the situation where if we start with a state which is in the in vacuum, and then we ask how many particles are there at late times, the answer won't be zero. The answer will be given by the expectation value of the out number operator in the in state, which is related to this Bogoliubov coefficient. So the quantities we're going to be interested in cosmology are expectation values of the field operator itself, or in the case of the harmonic oscillator, the Q, the position of the oscillator. So we're going to be interested in quantities like this, which are expectation values at some fixed time of products of the Q operators, like so. Equal time correlation functions in the in state. So this is sometimes labeled by the in-in formalism, which is distinct from the in and out states that you would have for an S matrix in quantum field theory. So the simplest is just the average of Q, where we have just one power of Q in here. And this is easy to see is zero, because when you expand Q in terms of the of the creation annihilation operators, you're going to get you're just going to get zero at all times, because we can expand these in in modes like so. But the higher correlation functions are not going to be zero. So the one of most interest is the two-point function, which when we do it for fields will be related to the power spectrum. So the two-point function is essentially the average variance of the field in the vacuum. And this is going to be reinterpreted as the distribution function for the size of the fluctuations that get produced quantum mechanically during inflation. So if we evaluate this, we expand everything in terms of in functions. Where everything here is in. And And then when you expand this out again, you only get two contributions that don't kill off the vacuum on either side. So we get this kind of thing. And again, we can use the canonical commutation relations to flip this around and make this equal to 1. So at the end of the day, this comes out and you just get the absolute value squared of the in mode function. And this is all at some time t. So this is sort of going to be the most interesting quantity that we calculate in the field theory context. And we interpret this as the probability distribution for the size of the field at some time t. So in particular, in the context of inflation, we're going to have the situation where there is a in region here, where this omega becomes constant in the far past, but there's not going to be a corresponding out region. There's going to be a mode function associated with the in region, and then the out region is going to be such that the mode freezes at some point. So we're going to be calculating this f of t squared for the in mode function, and then evaluating it at the time where the mode freezes. Okay, so let's do a simple example. The simplest possible example of this, where we take an omega, which is just a step function. It starts at some omega n, and then at time t equals 0, it just abruptly jumps to some omega out. Okay, so omega is a function of t. It starts at some omega n. And then it's going to jump discontinuously at time t equals 0 to some omega out. And we want to calculate what are the in modes and the out modes and the value for this expectation squared of the field. Okay, so the in modes, so to find the in modes, we have to solve the equations of motion subject to the initial condition that at very early times it looks like the simple exponential. So the equation of motion in each region here is just the ordinary time-independent harmonic oscillator, so we can immediately write down the solution. So at times t less than 0, we know by the initial condition that it has to approach this negative exponential form. And it will keep that form all the way until time t equals 0 because the frequency is constant. And then in the out region, let's write as a linear combination of the two possible exponentials with arbitrary coefficients a and b. Okay, and then you can solve for these coefficients a and b by demanding that the function be continuous and that its derivative be continuous. So continuity of the mode and its derivative you can use to solve for a and b, and you get that a by this expression and B is this expression. So that's our in solution. Okay, so now for the out modes, we do the same thing. We solve the equations of motion, but now our boundary condition is different. It has to approach the simple positive frequency exponential in the far future. So we write down the general solution at early times. And the known form at late times. And again, continuity of F and F dagger will allow us to solve for A and B, but we don't have to solve again because this problem is identical to this problem, but with omega in flipped by omega out. So A and B we can get just by interchanging omega in with omega out. Okay, so now we have our in modes and our out modes. So in particular, we can solve for these Poglyubov coefficients relating the two. Yes. Yeah. That should be an in there. Okay, so we can find our out modes as linear combinations of the in modes. And we know explicitly what these modes are, so we can just plug in and solve for these coefficients, alpha and beta. And you find that alpha is this. And beta is this. Okay, so now knowing these coefficients, you essentially know everything you need to know about the transition and particle creation in this whole thing. So in particular, the expectation value of the out operator in the in vacuum is beta squared. Okay, so this tells you how many particles are created in this abrupt transition as a function of the in and out frequencies. So as you can see, when omega in becomes equal to omega out and you don't have a transition, this expectation value goes to zero, which is what you expect. Okay, so let's ask now about the expectation value of the field operator squared in the in state. So this is going to be given by the in mode squared, evaluated, and let's evaluate it at late times when t goes to infinity, which is the analog of what we'll be interested in cosmology. And you find that this is given by omega in squared, omega out squared, plus omega out in cosine. So you get this expression. So the first thing to notice is that when omega in equals omega out, it reduces to the usual expression that you get in a normal harmonic oscillator. When omega in is not equal to omega out, you have this oscillatory and time dependence. And this whole state, actually, if you look at the rest of this sort of the expectation value of other parts of the state, you'll find that this is a squeezed state. So it's a coherent state that it's not, so a you have your coherent states and your squeezed states. The coherent states are states which are minimum uncertainty wave packets that sort of travel in classical trajectories. The squeezed states are more general. They're states which are not minimum uncertainty for all time, but they oscillate, and their minimum is a minimum uncertainty, but they oscillate in time at twice the harmonic oscillator frequency. But all that's really important is they're essentially classical-like states. They have classical-like behavior. Okay, so that's it for the time-dependent oscillator. We're now going to go back to the full scalar field on FRW and do essentially the same thing for the full scalar field. Okay, so for the what we had for the action was this expression in terms of the conformal time and the Mukhanov variable. Which looked exactly like a time-dependent harmonic oscillator. So in particular, if we go to Fourier space, and I write this in terms of k's, okay, now the action is literally in the form of an infinite sum, one for each k, of an infinite number of these time-dependent harmonic oscillators, where the time-dependent frequency is just this expression here. Okay, so to quantize this, we're essentially going to follow the same thing that we did for the time-dependent oscillator, just an infinite number of times, one for each k. So we have a mode expansion for the field. So we're going to write this field nu as a function of x and tau in terms of an infinite number of these mode functions, one for each k. The mode functions will be called u. Okay, and there will be again a product on the space of solutions to the equations of motion coming from this Lagrangian. Which, so So if we have two solutions, mu1 and mu2, it's the same as the inner product that we had for the harmonic oscillator. It's just now that there's an integral over x. Okay, so in particular, we want to choose mode functions that are orthogonal with respect to this symplectic product. So we're going to choose mode functions such that nu k with nu k prime are just given by a delta function. So this is just the continuum analog of the condition f with f equals 1 that we had for the oscillator. So the modes that we're going to choose, the spatial dependence is always trivial. It's just going to be exponential coming from the Fourier transform. And it's the time dependence that's going to be non-trivial. So we have the mode function is going to look like this. We pull out a convenient factor of 2 pi for convenience of the Fourier transform. And then there's the time-dependent part, and then the spatial exponential. OK, so this will be a mode function, provided that this f sub k satisfies the Mukhanov equation, which is just the equation of motion coming from the scalar field. So f double prime minus k squared prime over f of k equals 0. And it should be normalized according to the usual inner product that we have for the oscillator. Okay, so given any mode function, which is a solution to this, again, we can define creation and annihilation operators, A and A dagger, which will be associated with this mode function. And we assign them canonical commutation relations, just like you do in ordinary quantum field theory. With this continuum normalization. And this will ensure that the fields satisfy the usual canonical commutation relations. So pi here is the canonical momentum with respect to this Mukhanov variable nu. So it's just going to be nu prime. Okay, so given any mode functions, we're going to have this set of harmonic oscillators, and we can then define a vacuum state, which is annihilated by all of the annihilation operators, and then we can build the one particle, two particle, and so on states by just acting with multiple powers of the creation operator, just like you're used to in ordinary quantum field theory. And again, there's going to be an ambiguity about how you choose these mode functions f, and different choices are going to give different notion of particles, and there's going to be these Bogoliubov coefficients that allow you to translate between the two. Yeah, there is. I wrote that down for the harmonic oscillator. So you can extract off the operators by just using this inner product. So you're thinking of this kind of expression where you can act with the mode function on the field and extract the. Yeah, there's an exact analog of that here. And it's convenient to use that in order to go this direction in the implication for these commutation relations. Okay, so the final expression for our field in terms of these mode functions. Actually, let me write the original field rather than the Mukhanov variable. So I'll put this factor of 1 over A out front. Okay, so using this expansion, we can calculate any quantity we might be interested in, these correlation functions. So in particular, we're going to be interested in the two-point function, which is phi of x at some time tau with phi of x prime at the same point tau, so equal time two-point function. Generally, we're interested in calculating this in Fourier space. So we're going to be interested in this quantity phi of k with phi of k prime, where phi of k is just the Fourier transport form of the original field. So I'll write this as Fourier integrals of the position space two-point function And all this is happening at some fixed time tau, which sits in the fields here. Okay, now what we know is that this correlation function should be translation invariant. The whole problem is translation invariant. So in fact, this two-point function is always going to be proportional to a delta function of two of the two momenta. It's going to have a delta 3 of the k plus k prime. And then it's traditional to pull out a factor of 2 pi cubed. And then the quantity that's left is what we call the power spectrum of the field. So the power spectrum, it's a function only of the magnitude of k, because it has to be rotationally invariant. And it's simply the Fourier transform of the equal time two-point function of the field. So in general, it's a function of time as well. Okay, so let's calculate the power spectrum for this particular expansion. Okay, so if we just simply plug that expansion up on top into here and start doing out all the integrals, and we know how everything, all the creation annihilation operators act on the vacuum on either side of this. So the intermediate expression that you get is there's going to be a 1 over a squared out front from the two powers of the field. And then you get a bunch of Fourier integrals. So I'll call it, there's two places where k comes in. I'll call it k1 and k2. And then the original x and x prime. So there's only two places where the creation annihilation operators don't destroy the vacuum, and that's the a dagger part. So we have a of k1, a dagger of k1 prime. What did I do here? I called this k1 prime. And then we have the mode functions. And these exponentials. And the other exponentials that were there to begin with. Okay, so again, we use the canonical commutation relations to flip these around and turn them into a delta function. And this delta function ends up doing a bunch of the integrals, and then you get a bunch of other delta functions from the other integrals. And the whole thing collapses, and you find at the end of the day the expression proportional to the delta function of k as expected from translation invariance times the mode function f of k squared. So this tells you that the power spectrum, as defined up there, is simply the mod squared of the mode function up to this factor of a squared. Okay, so calculating the power spectrum of a field reduces just to calculating the mode functions. which is reduces to solving the Mukhanov equation, which is a simple second order differential equation. Okay, so now we have to talk about the initial conditions for solving that differential equation. Okay, so often it will be the case that this effective time-dependent frequency that we have, this A double prime over A, goes to zero, that A double prime over A goes to zero at early times. If this is the case, which will be the case in our inflationary cosmologies of interest, then the frequency is becoming constant at early times, and we have a preferred set of mode functions. So in this case, we can choose the mode functions to be this preferred set, which is that at early times it approaches the ordinary harmonic oscillator mode functions. Okay, so this will define a preferred vacuum state because of the associated mode functions will have creation annihilation operators which satisfy this. And this is what's known as the Bunch-Davies vacuum. And this is essentially the vacuum state for which the theory is going to look like a normal theory on flat Minkowski space at early times. So essentially, at early times, the mode is going to be well inside the horizon. It doesn't really notice the fact that it's on this expanding curved space, and it behaves more or less like a free quantum field on flat space. And you can use the Lorentz invariance of that flat space to define a preferred vacuum state. And that's what's known as the Bunch-Davies vacuum. So this is the usual initial condition which is assumed in inflationary calculations. Anytime you read about some inflationary model or some other model giving some prediction for the power spectrum or prediction for the fluctuations, those predictions depend on what you chose for the initial vacuum because the power spectrum that we calculate is the mode function. The mode function depends on the initial conditions that you choose. So the sort of default assumption that most people have in mind is that it's this Bunch-Davies vacuum. But it's not the only possibility. People consider other types of initial vacua. Maybe like if the initial state were modified in some way, that could modify the power spectrum that might give something that's observable. So that's sort of a one line of research that some people do. But by far, the most common choice is just to assume this because it's sort of physically well motivated. Okay, so the picture we have now is we're going to have some inflationary space-time. So here's how should we so if I draw conformal time going up. There's some point here where inflation ends. And everything's inflating in this whole region here. So at very early times, we're going to choose our Bunch-Davies vacuum, where the mode function is this simple exponential. And then we're going to calculate the mode function. And then at some point before inflation ends, the mode leaves the horizon. So we're going to calculate what is the two-point function. We're going to calculate the power spectrum at the time when the mode freezes. And this is going to be our initial conditions. This is going to be interpreted as the distribution function for the possible field configurations that you will then see when this mode re-enters the horizon at the start of the radiation domination. Okay, so let's do an example. Let's do the example where the space-time is pure De Sitter space, so exact De Sitter space, okay, so the scale factor in this case, A of t, is just an exponential with a constant h. So we first define our conformal time. Tau as a function of t is this integral. I'm going to choose the initial condition of the integral to be minus infinity. That's just a convenient definition for where the origin of tau is going to be. So we do this out, and we get this, which I can write as minus 1 over h times a, which tells us that the scale factor a of tau, is 1 over h times minus tau. Okay, so tau here has a range that goes from minus infinity in the far past to zero in the far future. So it ranges only over the negative numbers. So the picture of our space-time is this. We have tau t equals zero, which is the future boundary of De Sitter. And then the inflationary era extends infinitely far into the past, and tau approach goes to minus infinity in the far past. Okay, so our Mukhanov equation, I'll just rewrite it here. We can now evaluate this quantity explicitly, and this becomes proportional to 1 over tau squared. So you can see that this indeed goes to 0 in the past, because the past is tau goes to minus infinity, and then this becomes small. So we have the situation where we can define a Bunch-Davies initial condition. So we want a solution to this equation of motion, which as tau goes to minus infinity, it approaches the normalized positive frequency mode function like that. Okay, so this differential equation is simple enough that you can solve it exactly. The exact solution is this. I over k tau. Okay, so there's two solutions to the equation, and I've picked out the one that satisfies this initial condition. So as tau goes to minus infinity, this bit disappears, and you approach the required initial profile. So this is our Bunch-Davies mode function. And from this, we can calculate the power spectrum at any time. Our expression was just that it's the mod square of the mode function. So plugging in for what A, the scale factor, was, we get some factors of Hubble. And then we get the mode function squared. Okay, and now we're interested in evaluating this at very late times, times much later than when the mode froze. So the far future is where tau approaches zero. So at late times, tau goes to zero, this approaches a constant value over 2k cubed. So that's the famous scale invariant power spectrum of a field on De Sitter space. And we'll see presently why it's scale invariant, what that means. Okay, so we can think of this two-point function at late times as essentially living on that future boundary. This is the whole idea behind ADS-CFT, or DS-CFT in this case. You can imagine that you take this two-point function at very late times. It essentially defines correlation functions of a field theory living on that future boundary. That dual field theory in this particular case is going to turn out to be a scale invariant in the following sense. So let's imagine taking our field at some fixed time, or in our case, very late time. So I won't write the time argument. We're just evaluating this at late times. And let's imagine scaling the coordinates by some factor lambda, like so. we want to, what it's going to turn out that the two-point function that this defines is invariant under this kind of scaling. In other words, it doesn't, it's the value of the correlation doesn't matter sort of how big you choose the units. Okay, so let's write this transformation infinitesimally. So a small change in phi I can write as x dot gradient x acting on phi. You get this just by expanding this lambda for some small, expand this for to some small 1 plus lambda, 1 plus epsilon or something, and then expand this to first order in epsilon, and you'll get this from doing out the Taylor expansion. Okay, so let's ask, what does a scale invariant two-point function look like? So let's demand that the scale transformation here, acting on our two-point function, is equal to zero. So here I've used translation invariance to set one of the points to zero so that I don't have to worry about it. And then we only have to scale transform the first argument there. So the condition we're demanding, plugging in for what this scale transformation is that x dot gradient of phi of x is zero. If this is true, then we have a two-point function which is independent of how you stretch these coordinates. Okay, so let's just plug in. We need to go to Fourier space, so let's plug in the Fourier transform. For both of the fields. And then here is the Fourier space versions of our fields. And one of the exponentials here has been set to zero because one of the coordinates was at zero. So now we plug in for our value, our expression for the power spectrum here. So this becomes 2 pi cubed delta of k minus k prime times the power spectrum of k. So now doing out some of these integrals using the delta function, this boils down to x d by dx of 1 integral over k. Times simple Fourier transform of the power spectrum. And now I can bring these derivatives of x inside and turn them into derivatives with respect to k. So I can write this as, let me just go over to a new board. I can bring in the x derivatives and write this as d by dk by using this exponential e to the minus ak ikx times k, so dotted into this derivative, times p of k. So this is just using the exponential to rewrite the x stuff in terms of k stuff. Now I integrate by parts the d by dk. And when you integrate by parts, you hit this k and picks up a k derivative k dot k, which picks up a power a factor of 3. And then you also hit the p of k. So you get So this is by parts. You pick up a power of 3 from the d by dk acting on the k. And then you pick up this factor d by dk acting on the power spectrum p of k. Okay, so for this all to equal 0, it implies that the power spectrum has to satisfy this equation, where I can lose the vector information because p of k only depends on the magnitude of k. This has to be 0. And this is now a simple differential equation that I can solve for the power spectrum, which tells me that the power spectrum has to be proportional to 1 over k cubed. Okay, so this 1 over k cubed dependence is the characteristic of a scale invariant spectrum. And that, indeed, is what we got out of the calculation on de Sitter space. Okay, so tomorrow we will continue and we'll talk about the slight deviations from scale invariance and spectral indices. And then the plan is to essentially do this calculation for the actual inflationary universe with all the appropriate fields and gravity and all that stuff. So I think at some point you're getting a homework assignment which essentially walks you through this exact calculation. And it's quite tedious. There's a lot of algebra, but there's no cheating. It's the actual way that these power spectra are computed. Yeah, including like all the proper gauge fixing, taking into account all the degrees of freedom and everything. So you can go through as much of it as you feel you want to. And I will basically talk about that tomorrow and Thursday, go through that calculation. And the end result will be an expression for the prediction of the power spectrum for both the scalars and the gravitons during inflation. Okay, any questions? Yes.
What's the rationale behind just assuming that the field is minimally coupled?
So you should ask what's the rationale behind minimal coupling in the first place.
Yes.
And so from an effective field theory point of view, it's sort of the lowest derivative coupling you can write down.
Right.
Anything that's not minimally coupled is going to have its sort of higher derivative stuff, and it's generally going to be less important from, as far as like calculating S matrices and stuff like that. So that's sort of the. Yeah, I guess you should also ask why we assume the field is massless. That's more of a question, because you can redo this calculation if you like for a general massive field, and you'll find that the power spectrum isn't exactly scale invariant. There's a scaling dimension, which we'll talk about tomorrow, which depends on the mass. But we'll see when we do the actual calculation, including gravity, the sort of scalar degree of freedom that comes out is automatically massless. So that's up to some small corrections that we'll calculate. Okay, so see you tomorrow.